Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Nice looking day. It's still a little cool, but hey, not bad at all for January the 20th. So welcome in, everybody. Bill here. Dan is Dan's in today as well. And Drew is back at the controls. So we have the regular crew here on this Tuesday. And I believe we should have our regular lineup as we are right now efforting the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. See if we can get with him before the Tigers game tonight in Oxford as they take on the Ole Miss Rebels. Auburn looking to get to 500 in conference play. Meanwhile, they take on an LSU team that is on a three-game conference winning streak. So a big ball game coming up. Another late tip tonight over in Oxford there at the Tad Pad. And our good friend and voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us from Oxford here on this Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Bill, I'm doing very well, thank you. Good to be with you tonight. Auburn and Ole Miss at the Pavilion.
Yeah, my bad.
Here. Yeah, the Tad Pad is still here. They played a game at the Tad Pad back in November, I believe, against Cal State Bakersfield. It's the last game they'll ever play at the Tad Smith Coliseum. Okay. I'm not sure what they're going to do with that at this point, but that was the last game they played. It is still there, just across the parking lot from the Pavilion. Pavilion looks a lot like Neville Arena. There's some similarities to this. It's a little bit bigger.
Right.
Not much, maybe about 500 seats more than we have at Auburn. But this is an Ole Miss ball club, as you mentioned, Bill, that's playing really well. Wins at Oklahoma, and then this past weekend at Mississippi State, and a win in between at home against Georgia. So this ball club, after starting 0-2 in the league, has started to put it together, that's for certain.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, they feel really good, are very confident coming in. They have been a team that at times has given up a lot of points, but the defense, they've allowed a couple of opponents to not hit the 70-point mark a couple of times here recently now.
Yeah, they're holding opponents to about 71 points per ball game right now, and one of the big differences in their play of late is the fact that they're just not turning the ball over. They had like 5 turnovers against Mississippi State this past weekend in Starkville. So they're not a team that is error prone, at least not of late. And they're a very guard heavy ball club. And one of their guards is very similar to one of Auburn's guards in Keyshawn Hall, Malik Dia. 2 inches taller, he's 6'9", started his career at Vanderbilt, then went to Belmont before transferring over to Ole Miss. He is a really good player. I mean, he is a three-level scorer at 6'9". He's a senior and has 4 double-doubles this season, had 4 double-doubles in his career coming in. So he has doubled his double-double this season. And his last 10 ball games, he's averaging 15 points and 8 rebounds a ball game. So he is really starting to put it together. A really good one-on-one player. And then A.J. Storr is another one. And they're big at the guards. They're 6'5", 6'5", 6'9", at guards. And Storr, in his last 3 games, is averaging over 23 points per ball game. So Auburn will have to contend with this 3 big guard lineup. And Ilias Comerdine, I should say, is their starting point guard. And he's also 6'5". So this is a big guard-oriented lineup that Auburn will face tonight in this Ole Miss Rebel Ball Club.
Yeah, how you doing, Andy? Always great to talk to you. You're doing a great job this year. I got to listen to last week for a big chunk of the broadcast during my journeys with the Trojans. I was struck by, and of course, we I want to talk about the front court and how exciting not just Filip Jovic's game was on Saturday, but just the idea that like something's building in the between him and Sebastian Williams Adams that might be about more than just this season, and you've been there to see the whole thing. But on Ole Miss, it's striking how they have they've had a similar journey as Auburn. You know, they know what it feels like to get thumped. They know what it feels like to play to have a really satisfying home win, and they played some games that came down to the wire. Now Ole Miss won their games that came down to one or two possessions at the very end and had crazy circumstances. Auburn with Georgia and Texas A&M, they were on the other side of that. But these are two teams that feel like they've had similar journeys in the league so far.
Well, and the two games that Ole Miss won last week, they won at home against Georgia on a last-second tip-in by Patton Pinkins, who is a son of one of the assistant coaches for the Rebels, Al. And then he is also the same player that had the basket in the last minute that won the game at Mississippi State last Saturday night. So this freshman... He and D are both out of the Murfreesboro, Tennessee area, played at Edgeworth High School. He's had a pretty good couple ball games. And then in the other win at Oklahoma, he scored a career high 26. So we have seen freshmen emerge for both of these teams. Mm-hmm. Pinkins certainly for the Rebels, and just watching what Filip Jovic did last Saturday against South Carolina, and also the fact that Sebastian Williams Adams has scored in double figures in his last two games and hadn't done that since the first two games of the season. They're a really interesting pair. I mean, I think they're very good friends. You could tell that there is an affinity for each other. They were both on the post game with us Saturday. And you can tell that there's an interesting friendship and playing relationship between those two. And, Jovic has become a fan favorite, as we all know, at Auburn, because of how hard he works. He is an undersized big. He will be an undersized big in every game that he plays for the rest of this season. And yet, he still finds ways to get to the rim. He's a very good offensive rebounder for the Tigers. And I think some teams perhaps underestimate his athletic ability. But his steal in the second half Saturday, his steal mm-hmm. at the South Carolina free throw line and then driving the distance and dunking with two hands, I thought was one of the key plays in that win for Auburn last Saturday against South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time that we spoke a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how you could just see Filip each time out, the confidence just building and building. And, early on, you really saw him improving defensively, but the offense is coming. And Steven yep. talking about that yesterday, that, you know, they really are pleased, and you can just see him growing with confidence. And hey, if teams don't want to double team him, he's yep. liable to do that quite a few times.
He has an affinity to get to the basket, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he has surprised teams. My guess is that the scouting report's going to start getting around mm-hmm. on Filip Jovic. But where is Auburn Saturday without Filip Jovic and even Sebastian Williams Adams, considering Keyshawn Hall got into foul trouble so quickly,
mm-hmm.
he was out of the game 8 minutes into the first half and hardly played, and then picked up his fourth foul pretty early in the second half. Didn't even start the second half. Remember, Jovic started the second half for Auburn on Saturday with Hall in foul trouble. It's the only game this season that Keyshawn has not scored in double figures for Auburn, although he was key for Auburn down the stretch. With Auburn's affinity to make free throws in what turned out to be a very, very tight win against South Carolina. But where is Auburn without those two freshmen, considering the game that Keyshawn Hall had last Saturday?
Well, just the fact that Auburn was able to win a ball game with, as you said, you know, Keyshawn only playing 14 minutes, Tahad struggling shooting again. I mean, if you'd said those guys aren't going to combine for 20 points, Auburn's going to go 2 of 19 shooting 3, I would have thought, mark up another L.
Oh, Lamont Paris would have taken the stat line from Tahad and Keyshawn Hall 100 out of 100 times and expected victory. Speaking of Tahad, Andy, what did you think of the way Tahad bounced back after Missouri? Right?
He struggled at both ends of the floor a week ago in Columbia. Auburn struggled, period, in that game. It wasn't just Tahad. I mean, Tahad struggled. Keyshawn Hall struggled, especially offensively in the game. And it showed. And, you know, Auburn ends up losing that ball game by 10 in spite of another furious comeback down the stretch of that game. But Tahad's shooting game Saturday did not indicate how well he played offensively as a passer, and did it without turnovers, and how well he played defensively for Auburn as well. So I was pleased with and was encouraged by the way Tahad bounced back after a really tough ball game last Wednesday at Missouri. And it will take another one of those kind of games tonight here against a bigger Ole Miss team, especially at the guard spot. Everybody out there, other than Kevin Overton, matching up will be a little bit smaller than this Ole Miss starting three, this starting guard tandem. Now, Auburn does match up okay on the inside against Ole Miss. Ole Miss will bring a little bit of size off the bench. But to me, tonight's game will be decided by the guard play of both of these ball clubs.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it a while ago. Ole Miss, one of the better teams in the league as far as limiting turnovers, averaging fewer than 8 turnovers per ball game. And with that size advantage, that can be a problem. Obviously, I mean, Tahad's going to be facing a guy who's 3 or 4 inches taller than he is. Yeah. And you mentioned the size there at the guards. But Auburn has been one of the better rebounding, especially offensive rebounding teams in the league. So that's something I think that they're going to have to do well once again tonight against the Rebels.
Well, Auburn's going to have to do something tonight that it has been unable to do, and that's win on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about neutral side games. Auburn is 0-2 right now in road games. Last week, it just didn't play very well against Missouri in any phase of the game, in spite of the comeback at the end. And the other road game that Auburn has played is the unanimous number one in the country in Arizona. And Auburn was just overpowered by a team right now that's the number one team in the country. And for Auburn to remain in the hunt for an NCAA tournament bid, and I think still most of the prognosticators still have Auburn as an NCAA tournament team, but to continue that, Auburn's going to have to win a couple of these ball games on the road. And they have two of those this week. Now, listen. And it's two drastically different teams in the past, to face Auburn. Auburn has not won at Florida since 1996. Our friend Jim Fife was still calling games for Auburn the last time the Tigers won a basketball game in Gainesville.
Wow.
Let that one sink in a little
bit.
Auburn has won 9 straight games against Ole Miss, including all 3 games a year ago. So, and really the past has nothing to do with tonight, because that's a very different ball club that Auburn fielded a year ago as compared to what it has this year. I mean, it's different players out there. And I think they're still learning and gelling as a ball club. And it will take a supreme effort to win this one tonight at Ole Miss.
Yeah, again, you know, you're starting to see some of the other guys. Mentioned Phillip, obviously Elijah. You mentioned Phillip and Sway, but I mean, Elijah's a guy that has been stepping up as well. I mean, you feel like if you can get what you've seen from them the last you know, few ball games, and get, you know, Keyshawn back on track and Tahad, you know, be able to snap out of the shooting slump a little bit, they've got a chance to win anywhere. But it's getting over that hump and winning that first road game. They're very capable of it. As a matter of fact, Auburn, I believe, about a 3-point favorite tonight.
Didn't realize that. That surprises me, considering the fact that Auburn is still looking for that first mm-hmm. road win of the season, and the fact that, that Ole Miss has won three straight games coming in. So that one catches me off guard, Bill. I had not seen or had not even looked for the line on this one tonight. It's going to be a good crowd, I think, at the Pavilion. Four of my classmates will be at this game. Four guys that I went to high school
with
are going to be at this ball game.
What's the occasion?
Well, one of those guys, his name is Roger Stigg. And Roger Stigg was, for me growing up, he was the best high school athlete that I ever saw. A basketball player at Nashville High School in Illinois, mm-hmm. and was an all-state player, led Nashville to a state championship as a junior. And at, in grade school, they won a state championship, and he was the point guard. And he grew 9 inches in high school and became a fabulous post player that I got to watch play. And he played his career with Sean Toohey. Sean Toohey was the point guard, and Roger was one of the power forwards here at Ole Miss. And I think at one time had the record for the most starts in an Ole Miss uniform. He started mm-hmm. all 4 years that he played here, was recently inducted into the Ole Miss Athletics Hall of Fame. Just one of my favorite athletes I ever got a chance to watch. Well, two other guys that played basketball with him, and then my college roommate, they've all come down for this game. So I had a chance to get together with them last night. We watched the championship game. So there'll be four guys there. They're sitting behind the Ole Miss bench, so I'm pretty certain they'll be in Rebel gear tonight.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a great chance to get together and see a couple guys that I had not seen perhaps in 40 years. So it was great to see them, but they'll be there tonight. I think they're going to be rooting for the other ball club, though.
And yeah,
I would think so. The tickets came for Ole Miss, and he's an Ole Miss legend here.
Yeah, I remember him. Of course, Sean. Everybody, you know, thinks of Blindside, but Sean Toohey, for the younger fans, was one of those guys that the home team loved, and the everybody else just couldn't stand Sean Toohey. He was a guy that took a ton of charges. He was a pretty excitable guy when he was out there at point. He was a really, really good point guard. But he was one of those that was either a fan favorite or the ones that the fans of the other teams just wanted to constantly be on all the time.
They've won two SEC tournament championships, and Sean and mm-hmm. Roger, my high school classmate, were part of that first one in 1981 and made a run in Birmingham, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
At what was then the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center, now Legacy Arena. So we talked at great length about that last night and just had a great time reminiscing about growing up in Nashville, Illinois. And one of them was his father was our offensive line coach. And so it was fun to get together with them last night and reminisce, and they'll be at the ball game tonight. So
yeah, that's great.
I hope we beat them.
Really, Andy, I'm really curious to see, because I know Ole Miss has some size. Curious to see what the rebounding looks like, because when Auburn rebounds, they are really tough to stop. Well,
Ole Miss has not been a great rebounding team, though.
That has not been a strength.
Got a slight advantage.
I think if Auburn can get offensive rebounds, that offense is just and that you know and that would be. I think Auburn. I have a sense one of these days that 3-point shooting is going to heat up. It was frosty this past week. I think Steven talked about how he liked a lot of the looks that Auburn was getting. Yeah. He thought they were pretty reliable looks. They just didn't go in that night. I think if Auburn you know catches fire, and I won't be shocked if there's a road game in this stretch where the 3-point shooting is a little bit more potent. And if that happens, Auburn won't be a fun team to play during this stretch over the next couple weeks.
Ole Miss, Auburn has had the rebounding edge on just about everyone this year. The thing about Ole Miss is a little bit different. They're averaging almost 5 blocks a ball game. So it's not easy to get to the rim mm-hmm. against this ball club. So, you know, factor that into this tonight, or how does that factor in this? If they're able to block some shots, how does that factor the rebounding tonight? It's going to be a fascinating ball game to watch. I think these teams are pretty evenly matched. And one of these teams is looking for its first road win of the year. And as you mentioned, Bill, a win tonight and you're .500 before you get to go to Florida on the weekend and we get to battle the weather going down and coming back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Andy, let's we'll just make this one long segment. I mean, it's been a very busy time in the transfer portal. I believe Auburn added its 34th transfer addition today. It has been crazy here with the portal now closed. As Alex Golish and staff really being busy and just reconstructing this team, but there's a lot going on. I mean, you've got the winter sports. The winter sports are in full gear. Big win for Larry Vickers the other day against Alabama. Boom. As well.
It was an enormous win for Auburn and an enormous win for Larry Vickers and that ball club. That was a feel good day for Auburn to beat a mm-hmm. top 25 Alabama team. Gave them just their second loss of the year, and that wasn't a fluke either, by the way. That was a hard-fought win for Auburn women's basketball in that. Now, listen, their schedule continues to get tougher and tougher. But that was, I mean, that game is to be applauded for the Tigers. With regard to football, listen, as strong as Auburn is finishing this recruiting cycle, and I think it has closed it very strongly, they had to, though.
Yes.
I mean, you had to replace, you had to rebuild this roster, which I think makes it all the more impressive because not only is it Auburn is putting those numbers on the roster for the off-season workouts and getting ready for a late spring practice, but they've done it, I think, and done it with some quality as well.
Yeah.
And listen, how many times in December and early January did we talk about the needs of this team at cornerback, offensive line, defensive line, the quarterback room, for goodness sake, the wide receiver room? Don't you think that they've addressed all of those areas with what they have done in the transfer portal? Don't you believe that they've done that so far?
Oh, absolutely. I was putting together, because I didn't get a chance to do this while I was gone last week, and my goodness, the number of additions Auburn had last week. When I look at just a wildly speculative depth chart, but just looking at numbers at positions, this team has some depth. And it looked like a real stretch to get to that point just a couple of weeks ago. So I'm very impressed with with what they've been able to do to put together a roster. And this will be a really interesting spring. There's so many new faces to be watching and looking at all the competition. I'm so glad that we're going to have a regular A-Day game, and I think fans are really looking forward to it.
I agree, Bill. I'm looking forward to it. We're all going to get to know this team together,
mm-hmm.
including this coaching staff and the fans and those of us that are going to be working around this ball club. We'll get to hopefully meet these guys and watch this team form. But my goodness, I mean, when it was all said and done and all those players that left Auburn, what a daunting task that appeared to me to be for this
absolutely.
Staff. And this team just this group just went to work and didn't let their head up at all. And I think have done a remarkable job. Now, proof's in the pudding. They've got to produce. But I love what I've seen so far from this coaching staff and what they have done and what Alex Golish has done in putting together this roster. I would hope that, you know, they have a little chance to breathe now. As they get into the winter workouts and get these guys in class and then gear up for what I've said this from the beginning. When we knew one, that it was going to be almost a brand new quarterback room. This is going to be as interesting of spring practice as we have seen in a long, long time at Auburn because of how new it is, the competition. I mean, there aren't many spots on this that you can say, okay, that guy's the starter right now. I mean, there are a couple. I mean, there's the Xavier Atkins of the world, but
a lot of competition, right, Andy?
A ton of competition.
Yeah. We've had new coaching staffs before. We've never had 50 plus new players at a new coaching staff.
No. So. No.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, and then add to that, and even though we've had new coaching staffs, we have never seen this many players come from his former team to be a part of this Auburn team like we've seen with the South Florida players that now are part of this Auburn program. And that's a different twist on this than before, because yes, these are 50 new players to Auburn, but they're not all brand new to Alex Golish and his coaches. And I think that's a step in the right direction for this Auburn ball club. There's some familiarity for this Auburn coaching staff with many of these players that'll be suiting up for the first time in the orange and blue.
No question about it. Auburn basketball, 7:30 is the airtime tonight over on Wings 94.3. Andy, go ahead and update us on everything upcoming with the Auburn Sports Network.
Right now, the Talking Tigers podcast is with Jeff Jones, who's the director of player development now for Auburn. He was Alex Golish's offensive coordinator in high school and apparently a neighbor. Alex Golish grew up in the same neighborhood where Jeff Jones and his wife lived in Columbus, Ohio. And he spent 29 years as a coach, as a high school teacher, and an administrator, a principal. And when Alex Golish got into coaching, he always said that when he became a head coach, he wanted Jeff Jones to be a part of that staff. Well, it took a while for that to happen. But when he took the spot at South Florida, he called Jeff Jones, who then went to Tampa to work there, and he came with Alex Golish to Auburn. It's a fascinating story for a lifelong educator, and his wife is a lifelong educator as well. So that's the current Talking Tigers podcast. The Talking Tigers podcast come Monday is with Carl Nonnemaker, one of Auburn's associate head baseball coaches, who is Auburn's recruiting coordinator. As Auburn gets ready for, boy, a truly promising baseball season, I've seen high Baseball America. I think Auburn has ranked as high as number 5 right now in the preseason. And so Carl is the next. We're working if we can ever get him off the road with Jarris. We're trying to get Jarris McIntyre in to talk about his return to his alma mater as well in the Talking Tigers podcast. All of that. Thursday night, Tiger Talk is in the studio. We're not at Baumhauer's this Thursday night. Our guests include Stephen Pearl, Larry Vickers, Jeff Graba, and Bobby Reynolds, Auburn men's tennis coach. So that's all on Tiger Talk Thursday night. Of course, our pregame coverage starts at 7:30 tonight from the Pavilion at Ole Miss over on Wings 94.3. And we don't know the time, unless it's been announced and I've not seen it today. We don't know if it will be a 3:30 or a 4 o'clock start at Florida on Saturday. As in many things in our lives, TV will depend.
Oh, yes.
And so we'll be on the air from the O'Connell Center either at 3 or 3:30 on Saturday as the Tigers face Florida. Women's basketball this week, as we talked about, a brutal schedule for this Auburn women's basketball team. Britt Bowen will have the call on Thursday night. The Tigers are at Vanderbilt, unbeaten Vanderbilt. That's a 6:15 start right here on the ESPN 106.7. And Sunday, women's basketball home against nationally ranked Oklahoma. As Britt, Dr. Larry DeShere, will have that call for you as well on Sunday afternoon at 12:45, 1 o'clock tip-off from Neville Arena. So there you go.
Another busy week, no question about it, Andy. We really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. Have a great broadcast tonight.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle!
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does as we get things underway here on the Tuesday Drive. Yeah, we'll go ahead and get to break. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls here on this Tuesday. Love for you to join in. Our thanks to Andy Burcham voice of the Tigers, joining us right there at the top of the show, previewing Auburn-Ole Miss basketball tonight. Yeah, there was a pretty interesting game last night. That was a good, I think better than a lot of people expected championship game between Indiana and Miami, with the Hoosiers winning their first ever national title. How about, who would have, there's so many different things we've said, Dan, but there's nobody anywhere that I even think this year would have said, oh, yeah, you know, the first team to go 16-0 in college football, in major college football, is going to be Indiana.
Well, and Indiana probably doesn't, it's not as unlikely as the season Indiana had last year, because Indiana so
That came out of absolute nowhere.
Yeah, Indiana's coming off of a season where they made the playoff, but still, you're right, it's still Indiana. It's still, a lot of people thought last year was a flash in the pan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was going to be a course correction.
They had a new quarterback this year.
And it was, and some folks maybe didn't watch Auburn-Cal a year ago and realize how special Fernando Mendoza was, but here he is having one of the best seasons.
He is very, very good.
Yeah. It? I mean, he's just a guy who makes those kind of winning plays and, you know, feels like one of the safer first overall picks.
Yeah. I agree.
At quarterback, you've had, Joe Burrow, you go back to Andrew Luck, I guess Trevor Lawrence to an extent. Mm-hmm. Like, there are some guys where it just felt like everybody was very comfortable with this guy being the first overall pick off the board and a franchise building around him. Even Cam Ward last year to an extent, but I think that's where you can rank. But start here, Bill. Like, what a run by Miami, right, to get all the way to deep into the fourth quarter of the national championship game with a chance.
How about all the way until the final seconds?
Exactly.
The final minute of the national championship game.
Like, for Miami to be that close to a national championship when they were, you know, I think there were some folks questioning whether they were the right team to put in.
When you had
Alabama, Notre Dame, and Miami competing to make the playoff, you had to leave one of those three teams out. I think there are a lot of folks thinking Miami might be that team.
Yep,
you know, on the outside looking in, even though they beat Notre Dame in the regular season, and for Miami to turn that into a win over A&M on the road, right? A win over Ohio State, who a lot of folks thought was going to win this whole thing even though they lost that close game to Indiana, a win over Ole Miss, who felt like America's team at times during this college football playoff, and to go that close to Indiana, like, just, yeah, tremendous. Like, and for, you know, and Cristobal would have become the first coach, the first coach coaching his alma mater to ever win. Or I think it's the first coach to win he would have been the first guy to ever win a national championship.
Yeah, player in the playoff era, right?
He won a title as a player. Right. For Miami to then come back and coach them to a national championship at that school, I don't believe has ever been done before. I don't believe there's a guy with a ring as a player and a ring as a head coach for the same school. Maybe it is modern era, the cutoff.
I was thinking that maybe Bear Bryant had played on one of the teams that Alabama claimed a national championship for.
And I was thinking, Spurrier didn't win a championship?
Spurrier didn't win a championship as a player.
No. Won the Heisman, right?
Right.
But not a title.
Championship.
But it would be fairly historic what Cristobal's doing there. And still sets them up seemingly to have, we'll see who's playing quarterback, but sets them up to have
going to be really interesting to see who's playing quarterback at both those schools next year.
You're right.
But especially Miami.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have a suspicion of who it's going to be, but
Duke files suit today.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess Duke's lawsuit saying contracts should matter and this should be a thing, saying,
you know, it's fine after December 31st, 2026.
Yeah.
Then go ahead. But until then, they say they feel like they have the exclusive NIL rights.
We'll see what happens there. But no, tremendous run by Miami up to the national championship game.
I mean, it was a heck of a ball game. I was talking with Drew, who's a Miami fan, and I mean, it really turned out to be one of the simpler things. One of the first things you heard was Indiana doesn't beat themselves. Miami is a team that is prone at time to make mistakes. And the blocked punt penalties keeping a drive alive, mistakes by Miami were the difference in the ballgame.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And we thought, I think the longer the game was close, right? I mean, there was this belief that Indiana could jump them early. And, I mean, people were people were talking about that Georgia-TCU game and stuff that, where it was just like, could this be one of those? And we have had a couple of those national championship games that, you know, I think Miami put up, you know, an excellent display as far as making sure they were going to be able to compete through that game and have a chance at the end to cap off a historic season. And still, you know, what a run for them. But instead, Indiana has one of those years that, you know, it's crazy to think, because the kind of teams that have these seasons usually have some football tradition, some recent football success. And then there's Indiana.
Who had no success. Yeah. They were even going into this season after the 11-2 last year, they were the losingest team in the history of college football coming into this season. So to go from the losingest team in the history of the sport to become the first 16-0 national champion is just an unbelievable accomplishment for the Hoosiers.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, this is a team that, like, it's on that list of. It would be like if Kentucky's new coach went 27-2 over his next 2 years.
Yeah,
right. Like it would have that sort of shock to it, because you're talking about,
and they weren't even the doormat though that Indiana has been through the years.
Right. Imagine. Wrap your head around that.
Yeah. 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 All right. We need to get to break. Shane, hang on, because we're way behind. But you'll be up when we come back. The phone lines are open here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Let's jump to the phones, and Shane is up first. Hey, Shane.
Hey, Shane.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, two things. I got a comment and then a question. The only reason I know this is because I Googled it a few days ago, that question about a player
and coach
winning a championship. Yep. There's only one that's done it at the same school, and that was Frank Leahy back in the 30s or whatnot. But there's been a bunch that have done it as a player and a coach, just not at the same school. He's the only one that's done it at the same school. Yeah. That was just a cool little thing. I looked up the other day because I was thinking Mario would have been, I thought he would be the first, but then it turns out there's just one dude that's done it before him. Anyway, that was a kind of a cool thing to look at, a little history about football. It was kind of cool to share it with you guys. But moving on, could you guys speak a little bit about anything you might know about the upcoming baseball season? Just any little tidbits or anything? I don't know much. I haven't been listening too often. So anything, whenever you get a chance, I know you guys probably are busy right now, but if you could talk about baseball at all a little bit, I would greatly appreciate it, guys.
Oh, yeah, Shane. Yeah, there's no question. A lot of excitement about the upcoming baseball season. Like Andy said, Baseball America has Auburn picked number 5. I believe that is Auburn's highest ever preseason ranking. So, I mean, Baseball America, thanks an awful lot. I mean, Auburn's, got some dynamic bats returning. I mean, Chris Rembert is a preseason, I think, and I believe it. I don't remember if it was D1 Baseball or Baseball America's got him as a first-team All-American. So, I mean, the sophomore returning, Chase Frelick made some freshman All-America teams last year. Bub Terrell, another outstanding freshman. You've got Cade Ballou. So those guys are sophomores. Cade Ballou, if he's healthy, he's another dynamic player, both offensively and defensively. Eric Guevara, is healthy again. They've added some big time transfers.
I know some folks who love the St. Mary's first baseman. That's Madrigal.
Uh-huh.
Who thinks that he's going to be one of those. And Auburn's had a couple. Butch has been able to identify a couple of power bats. You think about Sonny. You think about the big fella from Kansas who came in and hit the ball. Like Auburn had a couple.
Oh yeah, Andy was talking.
Power.
Carl Nunnemaker is the recruiting is the recruiting director coordinator. Whatever.
And I know you're a big believer. I know Cade Ballew had an up and down season last year.
I just want to see him healthy and see what he can do. I mean, such a smooth left-handed swing with power. He's really got speed. An outstanding defender.
That's a bat. That's a bat you trust. If the player
really
is
do.
Right.
And then so, Todd yeah. Clay from right here in Auburn transferring back in and was the MVP of fall camp. He's gotten a lot of work at third. I mean, the offense is really exciting, and the depth of the pitching staff is something that I think everyone really excited about.
Before you get into the pitching, real quick, yeah. because that group of sophomores, right? Like that
yes.
group of like the bat, mm-hmm. like it's crazy. Like they probably aren't finished getting. They probably aren't finished improving.
No, usually your biggest improvement comes between your freshman and sophomore year.
Right,
that sophomore jump, that and second year jump,
and the thought of Frelick and Bub, and I think especially Chris.
Oh yeah,
to me, seeing what they can do now. Yeah, the offense feels like it's Auburn's got a puncher's chance in mm-hmm. every SEC game because that lineup looks to be so potent. Some question marks because you lost so much from last year's pitching staff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are a ton of arms. I mean, they've got some big transfers. That's the Marciano kid's lefty, mm-hmm. Big lefty. That I mean, they've got quite a few guys that are competing for starting jobs. That's the key. I mean, I think they've got from everything I've heard. Haven't had a chance to see them. They've been working out. You know, Brian was talking yesterday, and he went over Friday and yesterday, and we'll get a chance to talk to Butch. As a matter of fact, see that we'll get a chance to talk to Butch on Thursday.
You think Chatterton
find out a little bit more about how some of the guys are slotting right now?
You think Chatterton feels like a guy who
could
of the
be.
Returners?
I mean, man, they're quite a few guys. I'm wondering, guys like Alvarez who moved from midweek to to the weekend toward the end. I mean, he was just a freshman a year ago. There are a lot of guys. I'm not exactly sure how everybody pegs right now, but I think the talent on this roster, I can't recall an Auburn baseball roster as talented as this one.
The Western Kentucky pitcher, I think, profiles as a guy who starts on the weekend, right? Like that's a guy who had pretty big numbers, was sought after by multiple teams. Like it's again kind of like when you're talking about Auburn and football. Like there's going to be competition for these spots, but there are a couple of guys that Auburn has gone after where it's like, oh, you feel like you know what Auburn is picturing when they get him. And with is that Waylon? I think Waylon is the Western Kentucky pitcher where it's like this is a guy who could be who could be a pretty big, pretty significant part of what Auburn does this year.
Yeah, so some big time transfers as well as another very highly touted signing class. Yeah, it's 3 weeks, I think, from Friday, the 13th, the weekend, Valentine's weekend is when baseball opens. All right, 334-321-1390. We need to get to our final break. And then, James, you'll help us wind things up here in hour number one of the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and DN 1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Bill, Dan, and Drew here, and let's get to the Drive hotline. And James is up next. Hey, James.
Hey, guys. So, I got two things for you. One is a warning, and I want y'all to, whether anybody takes it serious or not, I don't know, but pass it along. The national news media has already said again that our portal class is very underwhelming and doesn't look that great.
You know what? They said the same. They said the same thing about Kurt Cignetti's class when he brought a bunch of guys from James Madison a couple of years ago.
Exactly. So if they want to go ahead and discount us out, let them go ahead and play that game. We'll play that game all day. But just let everybody know that's what they're already putting out there as propaganda.
I tell you what, though, James, I think next year in the SEC, like beyond, you know, maybe Bama and Georgia, maybe Texas, there's so much turnover. And like I think it's careful to you better be careful identifying sure things, right? And a lot of those teams that you may think of as question marks are on Auburn's schedule: Florida, Vandy, Ole Miss. Like, I mean, you've got LSU. Like you've got a lot of them. So while Auburn's got uncertainty, a lot of the league's got uncertainty going into next year too.
That's true. My second thing is this, and I don't know whether y'all gonna think this is a good idea or anybody's gonna think this is a good idea. It was put forth to me this morning from Auburn fans. Would you take any of the players that went into the portal from Auburn back to Auburn if they couldn't find a place and we had the room for them? Then my first answer was no. And then I thought about it for about 15 seconds, and I said, yeah, I'll take them back. But I don't think they agree to what I would do. What I would do is I'd say, okay, you want to come back? You come back as a gray shirt. You have to pay for one semester. You got to earn your spot back on the team. And then when you earn your spot back on the team with your scholarship, then you can sign a contract that's incentive-based. And if you were like behavior problems, well, you have to – your incentive contract is going to be production and behavior problems-based. If you're not a team player, well, you know, that's going to be structured that way. But you're going to
great stuff,
be a member
James.
Of this team.
Yeah. Yep. We can talk about that a little bit in hour number two, but we've got to get to our top of the hour break. Halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we've got open lines until the bottom of the hour when we will check in with Jake Crane. So we'd love to hear from you here on this Tuesday, your thoughts on the national championship game last night. A heck of a ball game that Indiana was able to win. They led throughout, never trailed, but it was really interesting. I mean, you got to credit Indiana for any time Miami got within a score, Indiana was able to score or keep the ball away. You know, I had a feeling watching the fourth quarter, I was watching that Miami-Ole Miss game, a game that wasn't terribly high scoring. Then all of a sudden, man, didn't look like either defense could slow the other team down.
Yeah, and again, just, you know, capping off a dream season for Fernando Mendoza, you know, getting to finish it in his hometown, you know, in the NFL stadium, very close to where he grew up, and then this 2-year run by Cignetti, and I mean, look, predict that they're going to drop off at your own risk.
They're already co-favorites to win the title next year. Ohio State and Indiana are your two top betting favorites.
Predict that they're going to, you know, they're going to fall off a cliff at your own risk, right? I mean, I think it's just going to be, you know, that playoff, and I, you know, I don't come away from this thinking it needs to get that much bigger. I mean, I guess some folks.
Because Friday's the day, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know some folks are. We have a couple of big things happening this week, including.
Right now,
you know, we could be getting announcements about
the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame.
About the Baseball Hall of Fame inducting some new members. But it's you got some really thrilling games in this year's college football playoff, and what a finish for Indiana.
And now. Is it good or bad, Dan? I mean, I heard some conversation on this, a good bit of conversation on this today. What Indiana has done has a lot of people, a lot of fans feel like, oh, why not us then? If Indiana can go from the losingest team in the history of college football to national champions in 2 years, is that going to shorten the patience even more? That fan bases now have the expectations, man. It's like if Indiana can do it, anybody should be able to do this in a couple of years. Now with the current situation we have with the transfer portal,
you know, I think that my question there would be, do what? Like
compete for a national title, not necessarily win it, but I mean, look, Indiana makes the playoffs in Cignetti's first year, and I think there are a lot of fan bases that feel like. Well, we probably have as much talent as Indiana did when Cignetti was hired as head coach. Why can't we compete in a very brief time span?
I would say we are in an era of college football where if you as a coach don't show the ability, and probably men's basketball too, it's like if you don't show the ability to compete at the top of your conference in the first 3 years that you're there, is it going to happen while you're there? And that's something, you know, and it's fair to wonder. That doesn't mean you need to be winning every game right out of the gate. You don't have to go undefeated in year one or anything like that. But I do think if you're still waiting in year three for the pieces to come together and for the progress on the field to become satisfactory, I mean, yeah, I think that, I mean, and the other thing is, if it gets worse from year one to year two, it is a red flag like never before.
Yeah, year three is probably your last chance.
And if it gets, I mean, if you get year three.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, year three would be your last chance if you get that chance.
Like, and that's one of the Harsin lessons, right? Like, to me, it's like watching a roster get worse from year one to year two, it's like, oh, this has no chance of succeeding. And so I do think that, like, in general, in college football, like, now if you have a tremendously – now, if you have a tremendously successful year one
– Yeah, I was going to say, if you win 9 or 10 games in year one and you drop back to 7 or 8 because you had a superb senior class, that's a different story.
Right. But if it's a struggle or a rebuild in year one and that rebuild takes a step back in year two –
if there's not much improvement over what was expected and then it goes back – yeah.
And that's a recipe for how something gets the plug pulled really quickly. And I think Cignetti is, you know, he might be putting that why not us attitude around college football at places that probably didn't think they had a realistic chance at the college football playoff even a couple of years ago. We'll see. But it's a remarkable thing for folks who remember how long Indiana was a non-factor in college football, and a school that, you know, fielded a team as part of the Big Ten, but rarely threatened to be anything more than one of the worst teams in the conference.
Yeah, and you know, we were just talking before the top of the hour, you know, about some of the thoughts that people have on I think it's really, really difficult to try to grade or rank recruiting transfer classes because a lot of these guys, I don't think some of the people that are doing the rankings have seen all these players. They may watch some video on them, but I mean, well, it depends on where they're coming from, and it's understandable that there's going to be more credit given to the guys who were high-profile recruits who went to high-profile schools, went to Power 4 schools. and then transfer in. And look, Auburn's got a few of those, but yeah, caller was saying, you know, Auburn's not getting a lot of credit for the transfer class, the 34, after today's addition of another offensive lineman, by the way, for Auburn. Not getting an awful lot of love because a lot of those players have come from smaller schools. And quite a few, as Andy Burcham, who was with us in hour number one, was saying, you know, quite a few players, what is it, about a dozen players or so that have followed Alex Golish from South Florida to Auburn.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what now that you've had a little bit of time to digest all of the movement Auburn's had in the portal over the last couple of days and all the different players coming aboard, like, are there things that stand out to you as concerns about this new roster or places where you think that they, you know, they're gambling a little bit on potential rather than leaning on someone who's really shown the ability to be a high-level college football player in the past? I mean, we talked about the pass rush a little bit yesterday with Brian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are a couple of guys. Look, I don't think Auburn didn't go after some of the more high-profile players. Yeah. I think, yeah, they came in second on a few of them. But the one thing I've been very impressed with is it seems like they quickly have moved on to like the next guy on their list.
They pivoted.
To go ahead and try to fill needs as best as possible. Yes, I think it would have been great if they could have added, a proven pass rusher.
Ace wide receiver.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
And yeah, and they've gone for those. And I don't know, maybe they'll still go after another receiver. I feel like there's still going to be another defensive lineman or two that's going to be added. Now, they're not going to be those guys that are the household names that everybody wanted, but it's not for a lack of effort, and I think they've done a better job than we've seen Auburn do many times in the past, that if you don't hit on that number one guy, then, oh, you're just sort of, well, I guess we'll worry about that later.
And landing a big-name receiver from outside the program would be great, but I think even if they'd done that, they're still banking heavily on Byron Brown's potential to continue his success with these guys he's played with before. Mm-hmm. The chemistry between Byron Brown and those receivers coming in from South Florida.
And I still think there are a couple of guys that stuck around here at Auburn that have some potential as well.
I mention it every time we talk about the receivers. I probably will continue to do so for a while. But when we went to the viewing windows, I think, you know, across the board, the writers and podcasters came away really impressed with what Bryce Kane showed as a reserve, like a guy who didn't, you know, Auburn went with more experienced options over him the last couple of years, understandably, but I think that's a guy ready to take the next step. I think folks love the Smith brothers.
And don't forget Sam Turner.
And Sam Turner stuck around.
Opted not to go into the portal after there was talk that he was. I mean, those are some really talented young guys.
And then folks wanted to know about the offensive line going into the expansion, like going into the portal opening. Folks wanted to know what are you going to do? How many guys coming in who project as starters or feel like they're real threats to win jobs are you going to go get? Sounds like they've landed at least three tackles, because I forgot about the Oregon State guy and a couple of the
Strand.
Yeah. And a lot of the services will tell you that Stanton Ramil, Joe Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, Ramil, I think, is your left tackle. I think Simmons projects as a right tackle. Strand could play either tackle. Jack Lehrer could play tackle or guard. I sort of had him projected, Lehrer, as the starting left guard until Auburn got Kenneth McManus today from Akron, who, as a true freshman, played over 500 snaps, started six games at left guard, allowed one sack in 505 snaps at Akron this past year.
And then you've got the Coles making the jump up from South Florida
Cole Best could very well be your starting center. Cole Stricker could be the
Skinner.
Yeah, Cole Skinner could be your starting right guard. But that's if you don't have Cale Ellis starting at one of those spots, one of those interior offensive line spots.
And there are other younger players who stuck around, like
Ty Buster and Jacoby Ward.
Jacoby Ward, Ty Buster are examples of guys that folks think might be able to compete as well.
I think the offensive line has enough pieces. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if they add somebody else, but I think they've got 16 scholarship offensive linemen now, and it's a good combination of experience and youth.
And some guys that are that have eligibility remaining, which is crucial too.
I think you
don't want to, like, even though what happens this year is incredibly important, you probably want to avoid having a room that's all senior.
Mm-hmm.
If you can help it, and especially with the offensive line, the thought that you could have a blend of seniors playing their last year of college football and guys who could maybe be beginning their development, I think that's something that you have to factor in a little bit. I don't know how much of a factor eligibility remaining is for offensive linemen, you know, when they look into who fits and who doesn't. But I like the mixture they've got going of guys with some eligibility remaining and some veteran players too.
Yeah, I have now, I believe, I've got Auburn with 89 scholarship players. And so there's still room to add more from players that have either entered the transfer portal and haven't found a spot yet, or, you know, in the late signing period, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks, or players that graduate and transfer after spring.
Hey, how about Max Johnson? I mean, you're right. How about Jake Johnson? Max is the brother, right? Brad's the dad.
Brad's the dad. I mean, look, Auburn.
We've talked about these guys for a while.
Auburn fans can remember.
I called him Max out of reflexes because Max for.
I mean, Max. I was there high above the field there in College Station a couple of years ago. When Max came in and teamed up with his brother to really beat Auburn. I mean, Jake is a big athletic tight end. That's something, you know. I mean, you talk about retooling the tight end position. They've got four new guys there at tight end, and now Jake is the experienced guy, and you've got a couple of really athletic young guys that they've added to the room as well.
Jake's played a ton of college football.
Yes, he has.
He's gone through several off seasons with some really good coaches. Excited to see what he can do, you know, in an offense that's going to be looking for targets for Byron Brown. Feels like there could be a lot of opportunity there for him.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, as I look at this, I mean, Auburn's about four deep at just about every position. They could definitely use another edge. I'm still not sure who's your edge, who's your defensive end. I mean, Jared Smith is a guy that is he going to be an edge, or is he going to grow into a defensive end?
The Ole Miss transfer,
Deshaun Womack.
Womack and Jared Smith feel like the two guys that could be asked to do a lot of the work there at positions Auburn had Keldrick Falk. Places where Auburn had Keldrick Falk and Kieron Crawford the last couple of years.
Yeah, because, I mean, you got Nate Johnson, the Missouri transfer, and then after that, it's a bunch of young guys. I mean, really, really young guys with J.J. Falk, Jaquez Wilkes, who Brian mentioned yesterday, the true freshman from just up the road, and then Joe Phillips, Chris Wells. I mean, it's all a bunch of inexperienced guys other than those couple.
Before we take a break, Bill, do you have a prediction for the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Carlos Beltran, I think, is in. I think Andrew Jones, he gets in.
In his last year, right, or second to last year? I think it's nine for him.
It's next to the last.
Yeah, but nine years on the ballot for Andrew.
Those are the two I feel the best about. I think Chase Utley is close, but I don't know if he quite gets in.
I'm a yes on A-Rod. It's not going to happen.
He ought to be. Absolutely.
I'm a yes on Manny Ramirez in his last year on the ballot. Not going to happen.
Nope.
I'm a yes on Chase Utley, I think. Decade playing like a Hall of Famer, hitting like a Hall of Famer at second base. I would think that if there's if three guys get in, Utley would be the third.
I think
Utley would be the third this year. I'm not sure it's going to happen. David Wright is probably missing couple, you know, 1,000 at bats or so.
Yeah, David Wright just couldn't stay healthy enough to put up the numbers.
Played like a first ballot Hall of Famer when he was healthy, but probably wasn't healthy long enough to justify inclusion into the Hall of Fame. But it's a guy. No real pitchers on the ballot that are to me. I mean, Cole Hamels is a first is on his
apparently a lot of people are talking about. Or I mean, it looks like he may show up on 25 to 30% of the ballots. Andy Pettitte's not going to get in.
Are you a no on King Felix?
I'm sort of iffy. Not really sure. It wouldn't be terrible. I mean, he was really, really, when he was good, he was really, really good.
He's probably the best pitcher on the ballot. Yeah, I would say so. Felix Hernandez. Anyone? I mean, Jimmy Rollins feels borderline as far as if you know. I know some folks feel strongly about Vizquel, right? Omar Vizquel, a guy who you don't have a lot of shortstop, second baseman, center fielders that are in primarily because of their defense.
No.
Vizquel, people would point to Ozzie Smith as an example why him but not Vizquel. I don't know. It's a curious argument. You know, I guess I missed a lot of Vizquel's like most impactful defense. But a guy that folks would belong. But you know, I guess that safest bet would be Beltran and Andrew.
Yeah.
And then maybe I mean, Beltran, by the way, they just showed the graphic.
Carlos Beltran is, I mean, his numbers are, I mean, what is it? 500 doubles, 400 homers, 300 steals.
So the
four of the guys that had ever done that.
It's 25, 400, 300 club.
He's in clubs that are very lightly populated.
Yeah, the 2,500.
There's not many members in the clubs that he's in.
How about this, Bill? Can you do off the top of your head the other four members of the 2,500 hit, 400 home run, 300 stolen base club? Beltran is one of five to do
well,
it.
Well, I think it's the same five that may be in the 500 doubles, 400 homers.
Okay, together. Another one's on the ballot. We mentioned him earlier.
Yeah, A-Rod.
A-Rod is one of those.
Yeah, and he's not getting in. But
pretty important two giants of the outfield.
Another one who's not in the Hall of Fame.
One of them not in the Hall of Fame.
Barry.
Bonds. Another one.
And Willie.
Who is Willie Mays?
Yes.
And then
who's the other one? Let's see.
That would be an expo.
Andre Dawson.
That's correct. Dawson is the fifth. But yeah, Beltran on that list. So and also I think universally regarded as one of the better defensive center fielders.
Yes,
of all time as well. So yeah, he's
pretty good in the postseason too.
Yeah, a guy who
blew. What did he not do?
But we'll see. Yeah, we should get that announcement shortly as to who's in this year.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Don't forget, Jake Crane's going to join us at the bottom of the hour, so we've got a few minutes if you'd like to get through 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday, and we have two new members, apparently, of the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. And they are the two guys that we said should get in.
How about both center fielders?
Yeah, that's
right. As well, a pair of the greatest at all time of all time at those positions. Carlos Beltran, who won a Rookie of the Year award with the Royals, was eventually traded to the Mets. Had a fantastic postseason, as you mentioned. There was also
the Astros.
At Astros, yeah, gigantic part. Was a Yankee. Right, and had some productive seasons in the Bronx as well.
It was with the Astros. He had that just ridiculous
postseason. Yeah, you know, traded to the Astros during that postseason was fantastic. Had outstanding numbers with the Mets as well, mm-hmm. and is elected into the Hall of Fame this year. And how about Andrew Jones?
Andrew Jones
making it first native of Curaçao mm-hmm. ever elected to Cooperstown, and a guy who just had an unbelievable decade as the Braves. Center fielder breaking in as the youngest player in baseball,
yeah,
and up until 2000, whatever his last year with the Braves was, 05 or 06, up until the end of his tenure with Atlanta was just astonishing.
Here are the voting. Carlos Beltran received 84.2% of the votes. You have to get 75% to get in. Andre Jones, 78.4%.
Okay.
Chase Utley, I thought the projections had him close. He only got 59% of the votes. Andy Pettit was fourth with 48.5%. Felix Hernandez, 46.1%. A-Rod, 40%. Manny, 38.8%. And Bobby Abreu, 30.8%.
I think it was Manny's last year on the ballot.
It was.
So that's he's going to have to get in through other
the
means.
The old-timers or the whatever special committees.
His case is going to have to be reconsidered by the committees. Bobby Abreu, seeing a slight climb in his numbers. I won't be shocked if as the more statistically advanced writers get votes, Bill, Abreu's the kind of guy who maybe because of the on base and the walks and the reliability, extra base hits. You know, Abreu's a guy with a really interesting case. And then Utley, yep. It's usually when you get to 59-60, you end up getting in eventually,
right?
Like guys who climb to that number eventually find that kind of support, but not this year for Chase Utley. And again, although Andre getting in probably helps because it helps the case of if you played like a Hall of Famer for 9 or 10 years, and the rest of your career is borderline or worse, does that merit inclusion into Cooperstown? In the case of Andre Jones, the answer is yes. I think eventually in the case of Chase Utley, the answer is going to be yes, but it doesn't happen this year. Beltran and Jones.
How long has he been on the ballot?
Utley? I think this is 4 or 5 years for Chase Utley.
Probably. Yeah, I would think so. I mean, Andre will – it's interesting. Andre Jones will go into the Hall of Fame with the worst batting average of an outfielder in the Hall of Fame.
How about that?
Worst career batting average.
But there is something to be said.
But no, you're right. Yeah. I mean, for a decade, there was nobody better.
And 400 plus home runs for a center fielder, and the defense that folks would say is that's one of the guys where if your offensive numbers are borderline. And there's no official policy as to how to weigh this, but if your offensive numbers are borderline and your defense was exemplary, like does that what kind of value should that have on your candidacy?
It's been more acceptable for an infielder, for a middle infielder, than it has been for a corner guy or an outfielder, and throughout history. But yeah, congratulations to those two center fielders joining Jeff Kent as the inductees into this year's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff, and we'll talk more about it when we get a little bit closer to the season as we name some of these names.
Yep. All right. So that is the breaking news. I mentioned Auburn adding a transfer.
Abreu went up, by the way. Abreu went up from 19.5 to 31.
That's
so I would think that Abreu maybe is tracking in the right direction. Jumped Rollins. Rollins
yeah,
and Abreu were pretty
only
close.
Like 25%.
Hamels 24% in his first ballot.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good
that's
for
pretty
Cole
good.
Hamels.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him get some consideration. So a couple of the Phillies from that championship team 15, 16 years ago could be part of the Hall of Fame eventually.
All right, I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane joins us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts on the championship game last night, the transfer portal. There's still an awful lot of players in it, but I think a lot of teams are, wrapping things up, putting the final finishing touches on their work in the portal. We'll get his thoughts on that and much more. When we come back for the final half hour of the Tuesday Drive.
Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. Yep, the regular gang is here on this Tuesday.
The usual suspects.
Yeah, I guess so. So what is your schedule for the rest of the week?
Oh, and I'm here every day but Thursday. The Trojans have Georgia Southern coming to town on Thursday. Troy looking to stay in the catbird seat. In the Sun Belt Conference, looking for their first league title in a couple of years, and yeah, they got the Georgia teams coming in state on Saturday, Southern on Thursday. So I'm here the rest of the week, and then off to, and I'm told the weather is frightful, Bill.
Fire is so delightful.
I'm told. I mean, it's off to West Virginia next week.
I'm telling you, there is a serious winter storm that is brewing. My sisters are in Black Mountain, North Carolina. They were going to come down this weekend our niece has a program coming up Friday, and then they were going to turn around. I'm wondering about them being able to get back up into the Carolinas. After this weekend,
we got a flight to West Virginia on Tuesday, and a game against Marshall on Wednesday, and then on to Myrtle Beach. So busy next couple of weeks, I'll be here. I'll be here most of the rest of the week. Always looking forward to that, and always happy to get to talk with our next guest.
Oh, absolutely, Jake Crane of Crane and Cone joining us here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive after an exciting national championship game last night. Jake, a lot of folks thought this one might be one sided. It might be boring, but hey, I mean it was exciting into the final minute.
Oh, no, we ended up getting a great game. And, you know, like we said in our post-game reaction show, that was one of the most physical games I saw all year. I watched the line of scrimmage for most of it, and it was just an absolute brawl up front. There were obviously some big hits on Mendoza, and the running backs were just running so incredibly hard. You felt like the two best teams were playing last night. And we have a lot of problems, I think, to fix in college football. But I do think those were the two best teams that played last night. And they gave us a heck of a game, and the Robots won. It's the best coaching job I've ever seen. Indiana's not the greatest team ever, but it's the greatest coaching job I've ever seen in college football.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. I mean, Indiana is a team that just doesn't make mistakes. And, I mean, it was crazy to see any mistake on their part, to see that false start, which you felt like, oh, that might cost them the ball game, because it ended up resulting in a field goal and giving Miami a chance to win the ball game. But they just don't make mistakes. I mean, the most unbelievable statistic, that number, the fact that how many plays it's been since their only fumble of the year in the first quarter of game one.
Yeah, and what's crazy is even when you do get lucky and they make a mistake, somehow they catch the break. I mean, go back to the game before where Mendoza fumbled twice and got it back, including on a sack. Last night, Bain knocked the ball out of his hand, and just by a magical act, he was able to hang on to it. It's tough to beat a team that doesn't beat themselves, and then when they're able to catch the breaks on top of that, it's brutal. But look, I mean, there was a couple times Indiana did blink and Miami had a chance, but I think the most impressive thing about Indiana is they're like a shapeshifter. They can win the game in so many ways that they can decide to beat you at what you're best at. I thought they went toe-to-toe with Miami in the run game from a physicality standpoint last night. And the teams that win the most win the most ways. And that's how it will always be. And Mendoza's one of the best readers of the RPO that I've ever seen. He's about as close to perfect as you can get. And it was a three-phase win. I mean, you block a punt. Thought you punted pretty well, made one mistake, fair catch, and went inside the 10-yard line. But at the end of the day, if that's the worst thing that happened, you're in pretty good shape. So just incredibly impressive.
At some point, Jake, it's probably going to stop happening to Auburn, but this run of quarterbacks who played Jordan-Hare Stadium before they got huge and won as visiting quarterbacks. I mean, Pavia, obviously, you know, going back to the New Mexico State game a couple of years ago. But I mean, I vividly remember coming out of that Auburn-Cal game, and one of the things, you know, in 2024, the Cal win at Jordan-Hare, one of the things that stood out was that kid playing for Cal, making, I believe road start number one in his career, had the moxie and had the it factor, the magic, like whatever that thing, that difficult to define thing that quarterbacks need to have, that the very best have, that ability to be at their best on money downs and throw with the right timing and the right accuracy and the right velocity, and just like he had it. He was overflowing with it against Auburn that day, and it's not all that shocking to see his ascent continue.
No, that's why I was begging Hugh Freeze this last offseason to please go get Mendoza. I don't know how you let Pavia walk in here, pull your pants down, Mendoza do the same thing, a couple other guys do the same thing, and then you select Jackson Arnold. Like, that's just insane to me how wide of a game. It was like God was trying to show you who to get, and you're like, no, we're getting Jackson Arnold. He made it four games at Oklahoma. But I tell you something else that makes me sick, watching Lee Hunter ball out for Texas Tech in the playoffs, watching Keontae Scott ball out for Miami too. It's just amazing how much we've not taken and given away. And look, you're going to miss on some evals. That happens. But goodness gracious, it'd be nice to hit a 2-0 fastball every now and then. It'd be pretty nice.
Now, I think we did
with Byron Brown, though.
I will say, I think that in those two cases, one of those guys felt like he really wanted to stay at Auburn and the circumstances forced his hand. Keontae felt a little bit more like he needed a fresh start and would benefit from going somewhere else. And it was a little star-crossed with his injuries, too. But you're right. I mean, it's striking to see some guys who were at one point big parts of Auburn's future being a big part of the future elsewhere. What do you think, Jake, of the job that Alex Golish has done so far, refurbishing the roster, finding guys that fit his plan, and bringing them in?
Well, you know, truly time will tell, but I think he's done a good job overall. I think he's done a really good job, and it's tough for people to understand that you can't just go out and try and get everybody regardless of their mental makeup. Like, yeah, you want to go out and sign the highest class you can and sign the guys that are the most highly touted, but the mental aspect, if Indiana's taught anybody anything, it's that the mental aspect is just as important when it comes to carving out a winning team. And I think Golish has brought in guys he trusts who have proven it on the field and off the field, younger guys he trusts, and then I think he's been very selective in not only the type player but the type person that he's selecting, because he understands that we need a seismic pole shift in the culture at Auburn. And you can't take that lightly. You can't just say that on one hand and then invite everybody in on the other. So when you're having to tightrope that, because you do need good players to win, there's a balance there. I think he's done a really good job weighing it.
Yeah, now, obviously one thing that a lot of people are talking about now is with the job that Kurt Cignetti has done there at Indiana, will the time frame – look, patience is also – you've always heard
patience. It's a dirty word.
Yeah.
It's a dirty word in college football now.
Are 3 years now more than – more? I mean, with what Cignetti's done in 2 years – how's it going to be possible for fan bases to expect that they aren't contenders in a very short period of time? Now, maybe shorter than what we were thinking in the past, where you've got to give somebody 3 years.
Well, guys, I've already think it's been sped up to two with the transfer portal. I think that all started with what Deion did at Colorado in year one, and they won like three games, something like that. I think it's already sped it up. The first time somebody did it, then everybody was going to have the built-in excuse, well, it's been done before. But if you put that in the context of anything else, you realize that that's really not the way it works. That'd be like Michelangelo getting done painting the Sistine Chapel and people being like, all right, well, Michelangelo did it, so we should be able to paint the Sistine Chapel. It's just some guys are better at this than others. That doesn't mean that Golich won't do really well next year or that he can't get close to replicating something that if it works out perfectly. But that for that to be the expectation is a little bit too overboard. But having said that, with the ability to bring in players at this rate and flip a roster at this rate, I don't think you can sit here and just expect 5-7 and be okay with it.
Yeah, the problem with a slow build, and I get why coaches want that to be the way, because it allows you to you know have guys that you trust at the most important.
Well, I don't know I don't know if they want that, yeah. Dan. I think it's just like it's more efficient if you have the time. But like, God, no, you just don't have the time now. They fired James Franklin for winning 10 games a year.
The problem with a slow build, Jake, is, I mean, not only is it hard to sell the fans on, all right, well, we'll just wait, it'll come, is the players need to buy into that too without leaving and going and playing somewhere that's winning and that isn't enjoying a slow build. You know, a place that's already gotten to the mountaintop.
And a place that's getting more money because they're winning so they can spend more money. And look, at the end of the day, it is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately business. It's been like that for a long time. And now that you're seeing the Indianas of the world ball out and the Vanderbilts of the world ball out and two group of five teams make the college football playoff, you know, it's like in the Step Brothers movie. Everybody wants Hulk hands. They don't want the rawhide wallet, but not everybody can get Hulk hands. And at the end of the day, man, like, it's tough to do this. But at a place like Auburn, you can do it. So, again, people are going to want to win now. They're always going to want to win now. It's going to be a disaster if something bad happens early. He's going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread if something good happens early. I remember Hugh Freeze and then beat Baylor, and people were sending him nine irons and golf bags. Like, it's just it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, well, the expectations will be there. I mean, and for good or bad, I mean, Kurt Cignetti is now – set the bar there, and we'll see who can live up to it. Look, Indiana's right there with Ohio State as far as betting favorites for next year's title.
Yeah, and I mean, Josh Hoover's really good, too, the quarterback they're bringing in from TCU, and their portal class has been amazing as well. You know, Mark Cuban's given $30 million for 0% of the company. It's just it's a great situation. Yeah, look, they're here to stay. I just want to see, though, can Cignetti replicate this culture and identity with higher profile personalities? Because it's not like he doesn't want the five stars or the four stars, but will they conform to that culture? Because if he can do that, then that's staying power.
And replacing, I agree with you. I think the guy they got from TCU seems like one of the better quarterbacks you could have gotten in the portal. Mendoza was just sensational this year, and it's a lot easier when, especially when you're talking about beating the very best teams, it's a lot easier when you feel like you've got a fighting chance at that position. And
100%.
Seeing what happens with him is going to be fascinating. We'll see. Yeah, and I wonder if you know, what other programs have maybe found their own Mr. Wonderful at quarterback, right, Jake? I mean, there have been some, you know, there's quite a bit of portal movement there, and Auburn, of course, with Byron Brown, thinking, you know, keeping the team together, you've got the chance for a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, Byron Brown, you feel like the more proven the guy is, I know it was at USF, but you got to feel better about, you know, what you've had lately and the continuity building on it. But it's that hope. It's the hope that kills you. It really is. It's the hope that kills you that, hey, our Wonder Boy is right around the corner. Our Mendoza is right around the corner. And the truth is, there may not be a Mendoza next year. Now, there's so many guys in the portal and so many quarterbacks going left and right. I mean, who knows? Look at what Trinidad Chambliss did, basically being brought in as an insurance policy for Austin Simmons, and he works out and becomes better than what Austin is right now.
Yeah, you say did, like his career's over. We don't know. Hold on.
Not for sure yet.
We'll see. That's a totally different conversation.
Yeah.
But no, it's we'll see on the waiver. Again, it's the hope that kills you.
Right now, Miami's hoping that Darian Mensah is able to get out of the lawsuit that Duke just filed today. I mean, this is going to be at some point. There's got to be something that at least gives us some parameters where it's like, all right, if you sign a deal, you're either going to honor that deal or there's going to be some compensation at least.
Well, that's why, and I hate to capitulate on this. I'm just to the point now. You got to make them employees.
Like, oh, yes.
I don't love it.
I agree.
But I don't want to let perfect get in the way of better. It just because right now they're financial agreements, and I just don't think the players are going to lose in court. You've got to make them employees so the contracts get treated like y'all being employees or me being employees, and they're two-sided, and then we'll have some parameters or there'll at least be consequences for breach of contract. But until they're employees and they have a collective bargaining agreement, which, again, I'm not a huge fan of, but I don't want to let the train go all the way off the track. I'd like to at least stop it and have a chance to fix it.
Yeah, once the different kind of voices, and I've suspected collective bargaining was the way forward anyway, but once you hear, you know, Billis and Bruce Pearl and Nick Saban and different folks who, you know, where it's pretty, and not to mention sitting ADs and coaches around the sport saying that's probably what, you know, the next significant step. I think it's at some point it becomes a chorus that's just too loud to ignore. Big one tonight for Auburn's men in Oxford,
yeah.
Looking for their first road game of the season, looking to continue a really impressive streak. This would be 10 in a row against Ole Miss for Auburn men's basketball, and it would give them some momentum getting ready to go to Gainesville on Saturday. What are you thinking tonight, Jake?
Well, golly, with this year in the SEC, who knows? I mean, I wouldn't bet this sport right now in this league if you gave me the money to bet for you. Like, it's just insane. I don't know if there's an elite team. I don't think there is. You know, when I watch this team, and again, if we're being honest, you know, I think Stephen's in a tough situation year one. I'll put it like that. Jovich is really coming along. It's good to see that. He's going to continue to get better because he plays his guts out. I don't even think he speaks our language, but he just goes with thousand. He's like a better Vakaitis from semi-pro. But when
rebound means rebound in every language, Jake. That translates.
He can do that, and I don't think he blinks for the whole game, which again is pretty impressive. But when I watch this man, if Keyshawn Hall and Pettiford don't score, we're in trouble.
Yep.
Like we can get away with it against, you know, South Carolina at home and stuff like that. But going on the road, Keyshawn Hall's, he's got to show up. The one I'm waiting on, and there's a couple, you know, you look at Freeman, it's his defense consistently. It's just like this team is still figuring out how to communicate on defense, how to build a wall. They're giving better effort, I think. But when you don't have a legit rim protector, like, it's just tough, man. Like, it's tough, and Auburn doesn't have that. I think Murphy's more of a finesse big.
It's like Dan said, it's going to be a huge one coming up tonight. So we'll see. And you're right. I mean, this league, nothing's going to be like last. Not going to be like last year by any means. And I think, you know, we're just about to hit a third of the season, conference season here tonight, and there's still going to be a whole lot of shifting going on between now and the end of the year.
Bill, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How many SEC wins do you think gets you in the tournament if you're Auburn? If you're sitting there, what, 11 and 7?
Oh, if you're 11 and 7, you're in the tourney easy, I think.
No, I'm talking about overall right now with where Auburn sits. Like, how many league wins? Nine?
Probably get you in. You might be able to get in at eight, but I think nine.
I think an eight and ten Auburn team is probably going into the SEC tournament unsure if they're an NCAA tournament team. I think.
No, it's a big one. They need to start the Schnozberries need to start tasting like Schnozberries here pretty soon.
I hear you. Hey, tell us what's going on with Crane and Cone.
Yeah, man. Well, we're fired up. We made the move over to On3, just kind of a natural evolution for us, a sports show going to a sports media company. But the beautiful part is the name's different. Turns out David's last name isn't Company, it's Cone. So we changed the name from Crane and Company to Crane and Cone. But they're at the same
time. I thought he maybe got married.
No. He is. David would take his wife's last name, though. No, I'm just kidding. He wouldn't. But no, it's same YouTube channel, same Apple Podcast, Spotify, all that stuff.
I appreciate you guys having me. And, yeah, Auburn needs this one tonight.
Yep. Always fun, Jake. Thanks, man. Have a great week.
See you, bud.
All right, guys. Y'all be good.
And Jake Crane joining us as he does on Tuesdays. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon and back to wrap things up here on the Tuesday Drive.
Affordable Comfort Cooling Systems.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final minute or so here on this Tuesday. Our thanks to Jake Crane joining us this hour. And, of course, Andy Burcham in hour number one. And speaking of Andy, it'll be about 90 minutes from now with the pregame getting started over on Wing. 7:30 pregame and an 8 o'clock tip in Oxford for the Tigers and the Rebels.
That's right, and it starts a pretty big stretch for Auburn men's basketball. A couple of pivotal road games in conference, and you know, you come back.
This one is winnable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying the next one's not. But it's not winnable. I don't know that Saturday's winnable if you don't win tonight.
No, and this team's already taken a couple of stomach punches. You'd love to see them, you know, face down the adversity and make some progress and win a close game. After the frustrating game Keyshawn Hall had, you'd love to see a bounce mm-hmm. back from him. See if Jovich can continue the momentum.
Oh, yeah.
From that big game.
Got to be excited about the young front court.
Yeah, yeah, Big Brovich, my main man. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll see if he can see if he can get something going, and then can Tahad see the jump shots go in, and if they don't,
well, it's on the road.
So it
better on the road.
So was Missouri. You sure. know, was a game where.
I was glad I didn't get a chance to see that.
It bled into the other aspects of his game. Can't have that.
All right, we are out of time here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Back with you tomorrow. Jason Caldwell joins us at the outset. Hope you will as well. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.